Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you could make it this morning. It's Friday, the end of our week, and at the Heart to Heart show, it's recap day. So, and I have a couple things I want to bring up because I want to talk about them next week. So I'm hoping some of you out there will have some answers for me. On Monday, we talked about the Florida bullying law, and I read the paper from the young man who had been in a school here in Florida and struggled with bullying and struggled with all the things that go on in a school where there are no there is no protocol. I guess that's the best way to put it. Florida has laws, bullying laws, and now they have the cyberbullying law, but laws are only as good as the enforcers. And even though a lot of our schools now have got the presence of an off-duty or on-duty local policeman or sheriff's deputy, it's not a job for one person. Some of our schools are really big. And the truth of the matter is, if a kid wants to pick on another kid, they're not dumb. You know, they figure out a way to do it when there's no grown-ups around. So this person actually gave us some of the information from the New Jersey protocol. And I found it to be very, very interesting. And he, according to his testimony, said that the New Jersey school, I can't say those together this morning, New Jersey school was wonderful. He said there was no problem with bullying. There was no altercations of any kind. Everybody came to school and did what they were supposed to do. We made friends easily. It was a good relationship. So I think that there is room for improvement. I always believe that. I always believe that no matter what we've done once, tweaking and working through issues on any kind of a game plan is smart. Nothing is ever done forever. Does everybody know what that means? You know, housework, repetitious. You have to do the same thing every day. Then you move into laundry. You wear the clothes, you wash the clothes. Ongoing. Painting your house. I know some men who believe if they've painted their house one time while they've lived there, that's all they really need to do, when in actuality, a house needs to be painted several times in the course of so many years. Well, it's the same with rules, regulations, laws. They need to change with the times. They need to grow with the times. What fit us when we were 5 doesn't fit us when we're 15. And it's the same with the laws and the rules and the regulations, and even in some cases, the simple protocol. It has to change as we change. It has to develop as we develop. It has to evolve as we evolve. And very sadly, in the course of establishing the United States of America, many of our laws and our protocol and the things that we established way back when, well over 100 years ago, no longer fit us. We've outgrown them. And we need to reevaluate and reestablish things that fit us better. So if a new Florida law is going to help us, we have to be able to wear it. And until it fits us, we're not going to wear it. I hope all of my amusing symbolism is reaching everybody this morning. Now, Tuesday, we talked at length about the two young girls that bullied 12-year-old Rebecca. And this particular story is still front page news. This morning, on the very early morning news at 5 a.m., they talked, the mom and some of the mom's supporters were on with Governor Christie. Or, no, Christie's not governor anymore. He's a lawyer now. And he talked about the punishment of the kids. And, of course, I think most of us moms feel the same way. It's not about so much punishment as doing something about the problem. You know, if you have a really a small child and they reach out to touch the candle you have burning in the living room and they burn themselves, chances are they're not going to touch a burning candle again. If they reach out and go to touch the candle and you stop them and slap their hand or just take their hand away from it and say, don't touch that, it's hot. The chances of them reaching out when you're not around to touch that candle and getting burnt anyway are very high. I hope you all know that. They're very, very high. Why? Because their inquisitiveness and their inability to not, their inability to want to do something that you've told them is right or wrong, it doesn't exist. They have to find out for themselves. So now you got these 15 kids that bullied somebody until they took their own life. The first response from the lead bulliette, I guess we'll call her, was, yeah, I know she killed herself. I don't give an F, was what she posted. Now, does that sound like the reaction of a normal child? Or does that sound like the reaction of a child who needs some help? In my heart, she needs some help. Do I forgive her for what she did? No. Of course, she doesn't care whether I forgive her or not. But at the end of the day, in order to make this mean something, she has got to know that what she did, she bears some responsibility for. Shelley, I see that you're on the line, and I knew that was your other number. I just didn't click you on yet. If you want to get back on your house phone, that's okay. I just didn't click you on yet. Up to you. I think that in regard to these kids, there do need to be some repercussions. But again, I think there's always something that's more valuable than just punishment. And I don't know why we don't look at that more. I don't know why we don't look at the value of teaching a lesson with repercussions that maybe result in working with kids, taking responsibility for doing something with kids that are struggling with what's going on in their lives. There's a lot of problems today with young people because of all the confusion that's around them all the time. This person says that's okay. This person says that's not okay. They watch our government argue over money. They watch their parents argue over money and who's right and who's wrong. Imagine how confusing it is today for a child. And if you're 14, you're still a child. If you're 15, you're still a child. God, I know some 40-year-olds that are still children. So, we need to rethink what the repercussions are if something like this happens. Maybe it has to be, you know, old-time shock therapy. Maybe they need to be in walk through an institute. Maybe they need to, I don't know. I think there has to be other answers than incarceration, jail time, punishment for somebody who jumped on a bandwagon and followed everybody else because it seemed like fun at the time and seemed like something that wasn't boring. And I don't think kids automatically know, understand, or get the fact that their persecution to somebody else might drive them to take their own life. I don't think their minds go that far ahead. Wednesday, we talked about Coach Buchanan, who played a Texas football game. He has a great team, and they skunked the other team 91-0. And the other team, one of the parents, accused him of being a bully and registered the complaint. And now the powers that be have got to investigate this complaint about a teacher who's excelled at being a coach and taught a football team to play as a team, to play hard, to be successful. I struggle to understand. I won't understand how and in what form that could be called bullying. We didn't do a show on Thursday because for some reason I couldn't get into my radio station, my Blog Talk Radio, and there was a lot of, something going on in the air. Cell phones weren't working yesterday, maybe the barometric pressure or something with storms or what, I don't know, but I couldn't get in. So I apologize for yesterday. What we were going to talk about yesterday was same-sex marriage. And I'm going to just make a couple points with this, and then I'm going to bring in Shelley so that we can talk about all of these things. Same-sex marriage right now is been okayed by the powers that be. And I guess in most cases, a presentation has to be made to a judge. And the judge and then the governor signs off on the paperwork. And at this point in time, 14 states in the United States of America are recognizing same-sex marriages. And of course, in the real world, if you decide you're going to share your life with somebody else and cohabitate and carry the chores, the responsibilities, everything that goes with living on your own with a partner, regardless of who the partner is, you should be able to do that. We do boast that we are a free world. However, I think one of the ramifications in regard to not being legally married has to do with Social Security. So I did look up some stuff for Social Security, but I'm not going to open that up until I bring Shelley in this morning, and maybe we'll get an opportunity to talk a little bit about some of the things that I found out. So I'm going to bring in Shelley. And good morning, Miss Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. The battery died on my home phone. It only lasted for 10 minutes and then it went dead, so.
Oh, on the house phone?
Yeah, so I guess I have to get it. You know, it's one of those rechargeable handsets, and I never used that phone, so I guess the battery went and I never knew it. So it lasted for, you know, I'm never on that phone for more than a couple minutes at a time, so I never knew the battery wouldn't last, and it didn't. I'm listening to the show, and all of a sudden the phone hangs up.
it's amusing. We get so dependent on all of our wonderful innovations and progress as it stands. And, you know, so that's a, if you stop and think about all the things that run on batteries anymore, that you don't have to plug in, that go on batteries and that supposedly recharge themselves, and if you read the instructions on something that you first get with a battery, phones are one of the biggest ones. They actually tell you to be careful how long you charge your battery, and if you keep taking it off and then recharging it and not letting it go dead in the very beginning, it, you change its mindset. Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, I ruined my laptop battery. You know, those batteries are very expensive. You know, that long bar that's in the back of my laptop, because I never had a laptop before. I didn't realize it, but you're not supposed to keep it plugged in all the time. You're supposed to use the battery, and then as it gets low, plug it in to recharge it. If you keep it in plugged in all the time, it actually prevents the battery from recharging itself. And sure enough, about a year later, because I used to sit here with it plugged in all the time, when I would unplug it, the battery would only hold a charge for maybe 45 minutes, and now it won't even hold a charge for 10 minutes. And the guy at the store told me that the battery was no good. It was he could see that it wouldn't hold a charge for, you know, that things are supposed to hold charges for hours. But because I always, for that first year I owned it, I always kept it plugged in until a serviceman told me, hey, you shouldn't be keeping this thing plugged in. Well, why didn't they tell me that when I bought it? I didn't know that. I never owned it.
Yeah. We're going to have talk about that one day, too, about all the different disclaimers that are out there for so many different things. Use this, but beware is really what they should be saying when they open their mouths. So we did a little recap. I'm sure you were on when I started recapping all the different things that we've got going on this week. And I think the bully law is an important thing. Did you get any repercussions from Monday's show when we talked about the bully law?
No, but I still want to get that email from you because I want to look it over. But because I think that's something that that we need to, I think we need to keep talking about that and tracking where it's going. I really would like to see something like that change in Florida. You know, the law is important, but I think also a movement to change the mindset of young people, and adults for that matter, is also equally important. There has to be consequences to people's poor actions or mean actions or cruel actions because it can actually destroy another human being's life. So people have to understand that it's serious. It's not a rite of passage. It's not something that you should ignore. When you're cruel to somebody else, depending on what's going on in their lives, you can push them over the brink. So there has to be consequences to that type of behavior. But in the same token, you can't change society just with laws. There also has to be proactive teaching and inspiring people to be better. So it has to be a combination of both, and that's why what we're doing on this radio show and other things like this are very important.
Well, that's what I agree with. I agree with the fact that, yes, there needs to be rules and regulations and laws, if you will, but the most important thing is, from the very beginning, teach people the difference between right and wrong. And I've always felt that way. I've always felt that if you, well, even when we talked about training, to let somebody go because they can't do their job, which I see happening a lot these days. You know, they're not capable of doing what you want them to do, so you just fire them. Is there any opportunity for somebody to spend time with somebody like that and make sure that they get what their job is? Often there isn't. Often there's no effort to make sure that the training was followed through on and that somebody really knows what their job is. And
right,
it's the same with the like I said this morning, why not take these 15 girls and put them in, I mean, I'd have to think about this, and I will, put them in a scenario where they help some of these kids deal with their personal repercussions to being abused or bullied or hurt in some way by somebody that shouldn't be hurting them. I know that we've talked before about peer counseling and having the next grade up come in to the classroom and be available for the kids to talk to. And when I first started doing this, my teenagers suggested that there be a venting time in the morning, and I thought it was an awesome idea. But I had a tough time selling it to anybody because it means that they have to move things around and make it fit in, because you can't do that in 15 minutes. So there'd have to be some allotted time in a school day when kids pick a partner. My teenagers told me they didn't want somebody from the next class up coming in because they have the tendency to kind of lord it over the other kids, like they're a teacher or they're in charge in some way. And then that sets a tone for the conversation that the kids aren't comfortable with. But to talk to a friend, somebody who's on the same wavelength, somebody might be going through the same thing, seemed like the perfect idea. So, I still believe that it's true. I mean, there are some days, what would I do if I couldn't call you up on the phone every now and then and unload with what's going on in my life? I'd be in trouble. That's what good friends do for each other. And if you're in seventh and eighth, you may not know that yet, you know?
Right.
So I do think that that would be an opportunity, and these 15 girls, instead of throwing them in a slammer someplace with a bunch of people that are either hardcore drug users or in some cases it's even worse. We read all the time about the things that go on in state prisons and in county jails. Is that really how you want to teach a lesson? It doesn't seem like it to me.
I know.
And, I mean, you know, and I think it was set up originally so that if you didn't learn by your first, you know, three times and then you're out kind of a thing. But now it seems to be the answer in a lot of different scenarios. I don't think all the time, but several. This week I've worked a couple different things for other people. And we are definitely going to talk about, after I get a chance to research, about where you take your anywhere from 13 to 17-year-old child if you know that they're hooked on drugs, where you take them. Because believe it or not, most of these halfway houses and things like that, you either have to be first court-ordered, second, clean and sober when you arrive, and third, it's very, very, very expensive. And if you don't have insurance that will help cover it, in many cases, it's out of reach for your average family. So as much help is going on out there with the 211 and the, you know, all the different organizations that have been set up that I've talked about on the show, this is still an ongoing, incredibly large problem. So I'm going to do some research and see if I can find any answers. But as we sit, it doesn't look so good. So anyway, the 15 girls, there was some news on this morning. I think you heard that I watched it early this morning, and the mom and Christy was there, and they all talked about repercussions for these girls so that they understand exactly, you know, what their actions.
You're talking about Rebecca's mom.
Rebecca's mom, yes, was on TV with and another representative for her, and she talked about repercussions that they get to that they need. She didn't say, you know, throw them in jail and throw away the key. She wasn't talking like that. She was talking like a true mom. You know, something needs to happen because the path that they're headed down is not a good one. And let's remember the weaker of a group of 15-year-old girls may now be struggling with the aftermath of remorse and guilt, and then that's going to lead them down a very spiraling path as well. That could lead to many issues for a 15-year-old. So
that's right.
And I'm not saying everybody should just flat out forgive these girls. Obviously, I'm not saying that. A beautiful young girl is gone. So there has to be, something has to be done about that. But I think we need to evaluate what serves us and what doesn't. You know, I've learned a lot about, in the last few years, about what does us good and what does us no good. And sometimes what does us no good is being vindictive and angry and be in the get-even mode. It very, very rarely serves us in any way. It just doesn't. And I'm not saying everybody can just do away with that, because it's not one of those things that you can just say you're not going to do, because your body and your head does it to you in spite of yourself. But it isn't good for you. It really isn't good for you. And it's better if you can evaluate what's going on in your life and find a different outlet for the anger that you feel. And if you could direct it towards something that's good for somebody else, all the better. All the better. And it won't just help you and the person that you're looking out for. The repercussions of a good deed are awesome.
Right.
And they'll, you know, you never know who you're going to touch when you do something good. You never know. And you may never find out. But that should be okay with you. That should be all right. And it just spreads more positivity and less negativity. So they are talking
about... It's like that commercial that's on TV. It's a wonderful commercial. And I've seen a fuller version of it that's on the Internet, a YouTube version of that. But you see somebody doing a random act of kindness for an individual, and there's another person in the background that saw it, and then you see later on in that day that person then does some random act of kindness, and another stranger sees them. And it continues on throughout the commercial. There are about 12 scenarios, and in each case, each time somebody did something that was kind or unexpected or something like that, or helped another person, somebody saw that, and later in that day, that person that viewed it then did something kind for somebody else. So it's contagious, and it makes us, when you see somebody do something that's unexpectedly kind to another person, it inspires you, and you carry that around with you, and it makes you feel better about yourself, and it makes you feel better about who we are as people, and it's contagious. In the same way it is to see somebody doing something bad and it puts you in a bad mood and it just makes you think bad about people, seeing random acts of kindness have the same effect. And it just makes you feel better about people and it makes you want to then do something kind yourself. So it really is contagious. And like you said, you may never know how you impact somebody else, but just know that every time you do something in a positive way, in a kind way, or just smile at somebody, you could have just changed that person's entire day. Or somebody viewing you be kind to them, you could have changed their day because all of a sudden you snap them around into a more positive tone for the rest of that day, and you have no idea the benefits that can happen. But just know that it can be really, really almost miraculous in some people's lives just to see something very simple, and it just shifts their entire attitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's totally true. Over the last few years, with the stuff that happened to my grandson, I've gotten many, many comments on Facebook. Old friends have looked me up to say things to me like, you've always taken the higher road. And the first time I heard that, I thought to myself, I think I do that out of self-preservation, so I don't know how high it is, and because it serves me better. But I've always been pleased with that kind of feedback that says, you know, that my whole family never spend a lot of time on vindictiveness and the get even syndrome in regard to the boys that hurt Mikey. So I think that a lot of people recognize it when they see it in somebody else. I don't know if it helps them to make better choices themselves. I hope that's what happens. But there was a lot of recognition for us in regard to that. So it tells me that most people are paying attention, or a good percentage of people are paying attention. And I think the way the mother addressed everybody today also was good. You know, she didn't come across as a, you know, get them, you know, they took my daughter away from me, get them. She didn't come across like that. She came across like some, like a mom, like somebody who cares.
Right.
So Wednesday, there was still repercussions. On Thursday on the news, I didn't see anything this morning about poor Coach Buchanan. But I got to tell you this, Shel. You know, my husband was an all-star in high school. Played football, played basketball, track. Had letters in almost everything he did. Senior year, he was presented with the All-American or whatever they called it, athlete for the school. He said his initial response, until I gently swayed him my way, was, he's a terrible coach. I said, what? And he said, no coach lets a team skunk the other team to that degree. They just should have called the game. And I said, is that what they would have done when you were young? And he goes, yeah. And I said, see, now that doesn't sound right or fair to me. That sounds demeaning to both sides to me. You
right.
teach, especially a football team, you teach them about sportsmanship and playing hard and, you know, practice. And then because the other team hasn't worked as hard as you, I guess it could be they're just not as gifted as you too, but I'm pretty sure 15- and 16-year-olds don't even go there. But I would have been, if I was on the other team and I looked over and the other team was quitting because they were beating the hell out of me, I don't think I'd feel so good about that, would you?
No. No, I'd rather be beaten a high score to nothing but finish the game, okay, than that. You know, it's a perfect example of that, and then we'll jump back to what Spike was saying. I've seen this video, and it was like I watch these motivational videos all the time, so a lot of times other ones will pop up, and there was this video of this runner. I forget what Olympics it was because they don't give you all the details. It's just a snippet. But you see this guy running, and all of a sudden he gets a leg cramp, and he falls down to his knees. All the other runners keep going, obviously. And you see that he's in terrible pain. He finally stands up. Now, the race is over. Somebody already won. It took him like a minute and a half to finally be able to stand back up. People had come out to check him because they thought he broke his leg or something. So when he stands up, you know, the clock's still running. And he limps the rest of the way around the track and goes across the finish line. He knew he wasn't winning, but he had to finish the race. And you see everybody in the stands are going nuts because this guy is obviously still in pain. But he had to get across the finish line. He had to finish the race. He didn't care about winning anymore. He cared about finishing. And I think any true athlete, any true sportsman would look at it that way. They want to, you know, who cares if they lose at that point? But they're going to finish, and they're going to finish with dignity, whether they get slammed or not. I mean, he came in last place, obviously, but he had to finish the race. And it just inspired everybody. Everybody, and he got a standing ovation for being the last one because he showed courage.
Yeah, well, and see, that I think that gets everybody's attention, too, don't you? I mean, don't you think everybody, well, like you said, he got a standing ovation, but everybody gets that, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, adults in particular.
Yeah.
And that's how I would feel. I mean, you work so hard to get yourself to a place like that, just like, I mean, I think I've talked about this on the air as well, and I think you and I have talked about it privately, both my 17-year-old and my 16-year-old grandchildren were playing football this year, and the practice and the school time is grueling. It's grueling.
Yep.
And they have the energy for it. I get that. And they're still going strong. They come home and play basketball. But it's still, it's grueling. And to think that it that you lost and that the other team felt sorry for you and quit because you couldn't keep up, in my mind and in my heart, is incredibly demeaning.
Yep.
Incredibly demeaning. And who's to say that at some point in time, if you keep playing, that they're not going to score a couple points? Who's to say that that won't happen?
Right.
But if you stop everything, there's no opportunity to change the outcome of that game, right?
That's right. I mean, there's been games throughout history that have been won literally in the last few seconds, and it was a win that by all, you know, like they had already said, that the announcers were saying, well, everybody knows so-and-so is going to win, and then the other team won, like, in the last couple of plays, and they just rallied and, you know, got lucky or said they were very strategic or whatever, but, you know, nobody believed it was possible. You know, now in this case, that wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have made up 91 points. But like you said, they could have scored a few points and not have been skunked completely. But you never know. And it's good for them to continue playing, providing that the coach of the losing team gives them the right mindset. Okay, we're really being slaughtered out there. But look, this is, you're honing your abilities, guys. Stay out there. Give it your all. And at least we can hold our head up high knowing that we finished this thing, you know? I mean, there's a way of motivating them and not allowing them to get too downtrodden with it. But there's something to be said for finishing something, even if you don't win at it.
That's right. And what's one of the worst things anybody can be called when you're...
A quitter.
That's right, a quitter. Nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to be a quitter. And I think that it's important to remember that, embrace that, and celebrate that when a kid is out there giving something their all. And you never know.
So after Spike heard the rest of the, when you explained to him what, because Coach Buchanan did try to even things up. He put his third string people in. They were just throwing the ball around at one point. They weren't scoring any more goals and stuff. What did Spike say when you explained that to him? Did he change his opinion?
Yeah. He said, well, it's still not good coaching to do that. And I said, well, what else was he supposed to do? Tell his kids to put their hands in their pockets? I don't understand what you're thinking he should have done. If he, by the end of the first quarter, he put in second string, kept the clock running, which means there's no, you know, there's no downtime, no opportunity to regroup. The clock keeps running so that they're going to be out of time sooner with less opportunity. And then by the end of the second quarter, he put in his third string. I don't understand what else he could have done. I said, you think that they just should have, you know, stopped the game? And he goes, yeah. And I said, wow, how would you like it if you looked across the field and saw the, I don't know if it really happens, but they say kneel down or something like that is the terminology. Does that actually mean that the whole team kneels down on the field and says, quit before we kill you? I mean, I can't imagine how I would feel. I'd want to say, get the hell back up. You don't know that you've won that. We've still got 5 minutes or 5 seconds or whatever.
Right.
You know, I think it's too bad. And obviously there are some... there is some protocol out there that's not real clear, and apparently every school district or every state, or I don't know how it's run because the paperwork that I read about that wasn't real clear, but there are different protocols for when somebody's getting skunked like that. And but to accuse the coach of being a bully, I think is far-fetched. I do think this needs to be recognized, and maybe something needs to be, I don't know, organized ahead of time. But I think a game is a game. And if you're supposed to play for this long, that's how long you should play, and the outcome is the outcome. Unless when somebody's winning really bad, you want to do like you would do if they were 5 years old and put one of the real heavy hitters on the other team for a little while. I suppose you could do that.
The thing is that if there were rules in place that this coach should have known about and wasn't aware of, and he should have ended the game, I still don't agree with that. But let's just say that that's what he was supposed to do. That's still not bullying, okay? So for this, the parents went for bullying because it's taken so seriously and is given attention. And that's just like in any other law, that's abusing the law. It's like a woman who's pissed off at her boyfriend and says, you know, calls the police and says he beat her up or something to get him arrested because she's mad at him. It's abusing the law, and then it diminishes that complaint for other women that really are getting beaten up. You know, if the cops keep getting called, you know, for false alarms, they're gonna stop thinking that that's a serious crime anymore. The same thing if you cry bullying when it's not a bullying situation, lawmakers and other people are going to get numb to it, and they're going to say, you know, they're going to think it's a non-issue again. This is absolutely not bullying. Whether the coach should have done something else, it might be a procedural problem. Maybe he should have done things differently, but it certainly doesn't fall into the realm of bullying. And I think it's a shame that that particular parent went there because it diminishes true bullying, which this was not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I think, too. And I think that you're right, that it takes away when we abuse anything, even abusing the terminology bullying isn't good for any of us, because then confusion and people not understanding what is this and what is that. How many times have we evaluated the true meaning of bullying? 100?
Yeah.
Just on our show. And I mean, you see it all the time on talk shows on television. You see it all the time on more celebrity kind of venues where the celebrities even talk about it. And, of course, the celebrities, that would be an interesting story. The celebrities are a world of intense bullying. And it's a part of their life. So I don't know. For me, I don't think anybody should have done that. I do think it's interesting that it happened because it gave us something to think about, and maybe something good will come out of it, some changes that will be appropriate and help a coach make a decision in regard to things like that. The same-sex marriages that I had written for us to talk about yesterday, it can be pretty involved, but I'd like to touch on it today so we can talk about it at another time, and anybody who's out there who's thinking about it and is would like to be heard, we would love to listen. If 14 states out of 50 are granting the recognition of same-sex marriages, I would say that it's only a matter of time before it's accepted throughout the United States. I would guess that that's true. It seems to be very slow-moving. I'm not sure why it's anybody's business but the people involved. I've never understood any of that. I don't care if, you know, for me it's like it's who you are and it's what you want. It's none of my business. So, but I did in some of the things that I read, there was a lot of conversation about Social Security benefits. And, of course, Social Security benefits were established so long ago that it was before women competed in the work world to the extent that they do today. And many of the much of the information that I read about survivors' Social Security says that, yes, you know, if the main earner in the family, which back in those days was almost always the man, passed away, the wife would be the recipient of most, not always all of it, but most. I guess they take out how much would have been allotted for him if he were still alive, and that's what they get. If now, the way it is, both partners work in almost every household, so Social Security is allotted in accordance to what you did all your life and how much money you earned and how much money you put into it. So at the end of the day, if you or your spouse goes to the happy hunting ground and you're left here, if your Social Security is larger, then that's probably what you'll stick with. But in case you don't know it, you have the opportunity to go to the Social Security office. You have the opportunity to let them research and find out if you are eligible for any of your husband's or your spouse's Social Security, if any of it can be allotted to you after he's gone, to help support you. I've been told by most people that are older, that are living alone, that they took their husband's Social Security because it was more. A couple ladies I know use their own Social Security because theirs was more. None of them, I don't think, are aware of the fact that they can call Social Security and have them work out something that may be more beneficial for them. So I did find out that that is acceptable, and you can do that. But in most cases, that's why the marriage certificate has become more important for some of these couples. That and the symbol of being able to be legally married and have a legal marriage license. I'm sure for somebody who's been denied that because of their life choices, that's a biggie for them. But I think Social Security also has something to do with it. Another interesting fact in Social Security when I looked it up was, you know, years ago, you and I talked about taxes Wednesday, too, about how long ago they started actually taxing us and taking tax money out, income tax and stuff like that. But, you know, in 100 years ago, most people didn't draw a paycheck. They worked their land. They were farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And they generated their food and what little income they could get from what came off of the farm. Now, whether that meant that they raised some cattle and would sell a cow every now and then for the money, or butcher a cow and sell some of the meat, or trade some of the meat for grains or stuff to plant, it was a major bartering kind of a system. So then when those people became of age, when they couldn't work the farm anymore, and say they had five kids, three sons and two daughters, none of them wanted to work the farm. So they moved off on their own. So mom and dad are sitting there holding the enormous bills for this farm. So usually they downgraded somehow or tried to sell the farm. If they couldn't, and children of this farming couple became, help support them in different ways, and one of those kids die and the parents are still alive, the parents have the availability to, as survivors of this person helping pay for them, to get some money from their Social Security. Did you know that?
No. I mean, I think I've heard that before, though. But yeah, I didn't know that it worked like that. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me because I've heard of at least one person I know that did something along those lines.
Well, I found it to be pretty interesting, and it was also interesting to me to think back. And, of course, I guess when you think about it, you know that that must be the way it was because, I mean, my grandparents both had jobs. My grandmother took care of other people, like a nursing assistant kind of a thing, and she worked in a couple of what they called back in those days old age homes. And my grandfather ran greenhouses. But my grandparents' parents didn't work at all. My father's mother never had a job. So it, times have absolutely positively changed. So there are some things, though, that you need to know. And recently, I think I talked about this before, I even had Barry Holov on the show, who is a Humana representative. And he helped me get organized when I turned 65. And because I didn't do that for Spike when he turned 65, we waited until this month to get him signed up for Humana, too, because Humana will sign you up and not do a physical or anything like that. So even though the things that have happened to Spike over the last 2 years with the heart failure and all the other things that have happened to him, he was welcomed into the Humana program and actually recouped some of the money that Social Security takes out to cover him for Medicare and gives us the opportunity to get his pharmaceuticals at a much more livable price. Some of the pharmaceuticals that they've put Spike on were $300 for 1 month.
Wow.
You know, and really, literally out of our reach in a lot of cases. So through Barry, I learned some other things about Social Security and some of the things that are out there. So I urge all of you to enlighten yourselves, educate yourselves about the world of Social Security if you're approaching that age. You can collect your Social Security by the time you're 62. It's a lesser amount, but you can still collect it. And there are, you know, a lot of times you need to research, though, because a lot of times there's hidden amounts of money that you may be eligible for. So enlighten yourselves, because it could make your golden years not quite so rusty, if you know what I mean. So now, next week, I'm going to open a discussion show, and I'm hoping that you're going to do some research on it, I'm going to do some research on it, and anybody out there who would like to help us, we would be so appreciative. Here's the dilemma. You have a 16-year-old kid. You know that that 16-year-old kid has gotten involved in drugs. You're not really sure what all. I mean, some of us older folks make the assumption that if a kid's doing drugs, they're probably smoking weed. Not true anymore. They could be using pills. If they were prescribed Adderall, which is for ADHD, at a very young age, one of their really, really good friends that has only their best interest at heart has taught them that they can achieve a much nicer feeling if they chew their Adderall. And they also could be mixing alcohol with pills. They could be mixing alcohol, pills, weed, cocaine, any number of things. You know they're in trouble. You've seen them come home a couple times. You're asking questions. You're getting the runaround. Most 16-year-olds don't come clean the minute you address them, very sadly. However, you're aware that something is going on. What do you do? Does anybody know? Shelly, do you know what you'd do? I lost Shelly.
I don't know. You didn't lose me. I was having a – my mute wouldn't shut off. Well – yes, that's kind of like a loaded question because it depends on if you had a gut feeling that something wasn't right, it would depend on what made you feel that way and then you could address that with your child. You know, you don't seem to be happy anymore. You seem to be agitated all the time, and I don't like these dark circles around your eyes. What's going on with you? Have you gotten into, you know, using things, you know, outside the home? Let's talk about that. I want to be able to help, you know. So if you approach the kid in a way that you're trying to find out, that you see that there's a change in them and you want to know where it's coming from, that would at least let the kid know that it's noticeable. I don't think you would ever get a kid to admit that they're doing anything, even if you gave them proof. If you said you found something in their room or something like that, they're still going to deny it because I've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Because we're going to run out of time before we get to this, but this will be what we talk about on Monday. But the question I'm really asking is, you've established that they're doing stuff. You've caught them high as a kite, or you've walked in and you can't wake them up. They're so out of it that you can't even get them up. You see all the signs and you know that they're using. Where do you take them for help? Who do you take them to for help? If you approach and you get a reaction that is one of obstinance and in some cases violence, what do you do with them? You cannot. Let me say there's a few things that you cannot do. You cannot just take them to the emergency room and ask the emergency room doctors to take care of them. They're going to say to you, your kid's high as a kite. We can't do anything for them. If they've tried to kill themselves and really abused some kind of a drug, they will pump their stomach. They may put them in, they may Baker Act them, which means that they take them and put them someplace that isn't very desirable and keep them for several days, usually up to 3 days until they're clean and sober. You, at that point in time, pretty much relinquish your rights as a parent because they take over them. Then you get them back. Now they're empty of drugs, but they're still, they're still addicted. And what do you do? If you have insurance, there are some places that are unbelievably expensive for them to go stay and get clean and sober. If you don't have insurance, you better be ready to cough up several thousand dollars. If you think you can do it on your own, good luck to you. Very difficult. I am aware of some people that have done that. It's a difficult job, but is possible. But it's a dilemma. It is a major dilemma out there today. Mm-hmm. Kids are using and getting in trouble, and it spirals into many other things that they shouldn't be involved in some cases, and breaking and entering and all those kind of things. Then they get thrown into prison, and that's really not the problem. It's not that they're a bad kid, it's that they're addicted to drugs. We need some input on this. I'm asking everybody that's listening. I know some nurses listen. I know some parents listen. I know some teachers listen. We need help with this. We need to put something out there so that parents know what this is. A major, major problem and has been for many, many years now. So I want everybody to think about that. If there's something you can do to help, you can either message me on Facebook, call the phone number, get on Blog Talk Radio, talk to us on the show. We're open to any kind of suggestion because a lot of people out there need our guidance and our help with this. And if there isn't anything out there, maybe it's time we figured out something that would work. So I want to send you off on a great day. I think it's been drizzling while I've been here in my office this morning. And the weather is cooler here in South Florida, finally. So everybody have a great weekend. Thank you for everything. God bless. Thank you, Shelley. We'll talk after a while.
Sure. Yeah, look forward to it.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye, Shel.
Bye, Renee. Everyone have a wonderful day.